Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearum with Let's Talk.
Yama, I'm Bo Spearum, Gamilaroi, Kuma and Marawari, and welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the country on which we are broadcasting from, and also to. I'd also like to pay my respects to our old people, also to everybody around the continent that is tuning in via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS, or if you're tuning in via our website. And as always, it is great to have your company. First day back at work for myself, and I'm sure for many thousands of people around Southeast Queensland. I guess you could say some of us are the lucky ones. We've had some heavy rain, and I know here at work a lot of people in this area are doing it rough, as many other people in Southeast Queensland, Northern New South Wales are as well. On the program, we're going to chat about what is going on here in Southeast Queensland. I have two of the local Greens members to have a chat about that. Also want to chat about some of the services that are available to some of the communities that are affected as well. And I'll bring both of my guests in any order. Whoever wants to go first, just tell us your name and a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Amy McMahon. I'm the local state member for South Brisbane. My place is down in Woolloongabba, very close to Norman Creek. So we've seen the creek rising from our back deck, but thankfully we haven't gotten wet yet. My office is just up on Vulture Street as a drop-in centre.
Yeah, so up everyone. I'm Councillor Jonathan Sree. So I'm the councillor for the Gabba ward, which covers same sort of area as Amy for the local government. So like West End, Woolloongabba, Kangaroo Point. I live in a houseboat actually on Kulpurum, which is the Aboriginal name for Norman Creek. And so, yeah, we had an interesting time last couple of days watching the creek roaring like a torrent. We got a bit of water into the boat and we've had to bail out the hull a couple of times. And so, yeah, been trying to fix the boat at the same time as helping other people. But, yeah, thanks for the acknowledgement of country, Bo, and also want to pay our respects to elders and past and present.
Definitely. And we'll just get straight into it. Which areas in and around are affected, especially, this area, inner city areas, I guess every area near the river?
Mm. Yeah. So there's quite a lot of flooding around West End, around that sort of low-lying area around the river. Lots of houses have gone under, lots of streets are cut. Also around East Brisbane, Norman Park and Woolloongabba, there's areas where there's sort of localised flooding around there, and I think parts of Kangaroo Point as well
have had some flooding. Yeah, I think a few basement car parks went under in Kangaroo Point, and the suburb of South Brisbane, which is right next to West End, also copped it pretty bad all around South Bank. And interestingly, there's one or two areas that they're not right next to the river. I think people think the houses right next to the river flood first, but sometimes the river comes up the stormwater drains as well. So there are places like Manning Street, just next to Musgrave Park, that have also flooded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember last time we had some big rain, and it was when I was working at the office with you, and around the Woolloongabba area, I was flooded, and we were just sort of handing out sandbags and stuff
right,
as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is much, much
way worse. Yeah.
And I guess we'll tell us a bit about some of the areas that have been cut off and how people are being affected. Obviously, electricity, shops are down. What else?
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of people have still lost power, and it's interesting because one of the big changes since 2011 is that way more people live in those high-rise apartments down on the river, and a lot of those apartments have lost power, and a lot of the basement car parks have been flooded, and the lifts aren't even working. So like people on an 8-story riverside high-rise have to walk down, and then it's kind of interesting because a lot of these apartments were approved and the property developers were like, yeah, it'll be fine, it's above the flood level, but they're still being affected even if the apartments themselves went flooded. So I think a lot of people are cut off from services and access to shops and that sort of thing. Like you said, people don't have power. I think there's been a lot of property damage, but the biggest issue for me is that a lot of people have become homeless, and we don't know the full numbers yet, but we're probably talking thousands across Southeast Queensland have lost their homes. And at the moment, there's still no clear plan of where those people will end up. This is really, I think, an opportunity to improve the housing situation, because we know we're in a housing crisis. But yeah, that's, I think, the big one for me to be thinking about in the medium term is, like, everyone focuses on, oh, let's clean up the mud and, oh, all this furniture got damaged. But what can we do to ensure that the people who've been made homeless end up in more secure housing after all this?
And I guess just on that, you know, we've seen over the last 2 years of this pandemic, you know, the government can really come out and sort of support, you know, low-income workers, people who have lost their jobs, people who are homeless or semi-homeless as well. You know, they really bumped up the New Start allowance. And so hopefully, you know, we can get around and do things like that as well, especially at the moment as well. And just in general, you know, I think, you know, the cost of living for people is just ridiculous. You know, the amount of, you know, friends like, you know, myself and my little family who have had to move out of sort of certain areas.
Because the rent's so damn high.
Yeah. But, yeah, I actually saw some stuff online. Some family out in Ipswich, their house went under as well. Renters as well. So, you know, this crisis about homelessness sort of growing as well.
I mean, is it correct? Sorry to interrupt. Do landlords have to discount rent while like, if a property is unlivable, you shouldn't be paying rent, right?
I don't know if there's a blanket rule for what goes on here. We did put out some information yesterday about, like, landlords can't just access your house while it's underwater, and landlords are required to do any maintenance. Tenants shouldn't be expected to be doing cleanup and maintenance on their properties.
But we know
that we do it. Exactly. Yeah.
That's right.
Like the property that we had before the one we're at now.
Got all moldy. Is that the one?
No, that was the other one. This one, the ceiling collapsed.
Jeez, that's right.
It was like 6 months.
Far out. And the landlord did jackal.
Did nothing until, I think we were chatting with you, fathers, and we said, you know what I mean, like, we're going to really push a case, you know, and you know, then, you know, like, within a week, they sent, you know, a guy to check it and price it. And then, like we literally had two poles holding up
a
spare room.
Jesus. And I expect we can see a lot more of that now with landlords being like, oh, well, we'll get round to it when we can. And there'll be some good landlords trying to make repairs, but a lot will be making excuses, and they'll be saying, oh, let's wait till the carpenters and electricians are a bit cheaper kind of stuff. They won't want to spend the money to fix it early. Whereas if it was their own home, they'd be cleaning it up and repairing it straight away.
Yeah, and that was definitely the experience in 2011. There's a lot of people who are renters then who have stories about, really shoddy repairs, like paint being just put over river mud, and people being displaced from their homes for really long time. And I just wanted to pick up, Bo, on what you were saying about government support. I think we saw really good government support kick in 2020 around COVID with the doubling of JobSeeker. At the moment, there's some very small payments for people who have been immediately affected by the floods. I think there's flood relief, but it's quite small. It's $1,000 if you've incurred like $20,000 of damage. And there's some individual support kicking in. But I think there are some big deficiencies in the kind of support governments are offering. We saw the flood warnings come through really late. A lot of people got a text message at about 8:30, 9 o'clock when the waters were already peaking. A lot of people not having good, clear information. But one of the really good things we've seen in this neighbourhood is a lot of people looking after each other, a lot of people who have a friend's house they can go and stay with. And a lot of really good organisations, MICA, West End Community House, who are providing very immediate practical support for people right now in the absence of, you know, good government networks to look after people.
And isn't it interesting how, like, because this happens with crisis, right? Everyone bands together and helps each other. It's almost like the normal individualistic capitalist colonial framework collapses and everyone's like, oh, yeah, we're all humans, we're all connected, we've all got to... And it's kind of like, how can we get that to remain and to continue, because it's like we were already living through a climate crisis and a crisis of systemic racism and a housing crisis. Those crises are ongoing, but these sorts of discrete disasters like a flood or a bushfire, it's easier for people to be like, oh, everything's changed for the moment, let's get through this little period. But it's like there's a broader structural problem here that, how can we make sure that people care for each other and act communally outside of the context of a flood?
You know, and I guess it's not sort of, you know, how do we use our time to sort of point the finger at somebody?
Yeah.
These are the things that we've got to address anyways, because that's what you know, people who are marginalised live daily as well.
That's it.
You know, so outside of these floods or the pandemic, you know, we do have a high number of homelessness or people accessing services as well. Obviously, at the moment right now with the floods and the pandemic, people are accessing those things now. So it's, you know, like there's a whole bunch of things to address. Things like this just highlight the gaps and where people, you know, in power need to sort of really, you know, get behind and support, you know, these initiatives as well. So what have you been doing over the last couple of days in regards to supporting community? I know you were doing some meetups at Bunyapa.
We've been organising some community meetings just to get some ideas about sort of next steps for helping with cleanup. We've been dropping off bags of ice to people who need, door knocking to check in on people, dropping off sandbags. We've been opening up places for people to come and charge their phones and their computers or places to work.
Do you know, like, the demographic? Is it young, more so than older in this sort of area?
The demographic of West End is younger and predominantly renters, but all ages have been affected. I was going to say, like, obviously West End's been smashed. And I don't know, Amy, you might have more detail on this, but, like, I think Centrelink's reporting that there's, like, 3,000 homes, but I think they might be counting the apartment blocks as individual properties. So it could be more like 5,000 people who are out of power.
It's possible,
yeah.
And a lot of those apartment blocks are, like, you know, just working families, international students.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't have really good access to information, like some of the more established parts of the neighbourhood. So trying to reach out to them to let them know, like, this is going on, the power's going to be out for a few days, this is where you can go for support.
Understandably, I think there's a narrative that West End is quite a wealthy area because property prices are so high. But just because property prices are high doesn't mean that everyone here has a lot of money. That's a lot of low-income renters who are really getting screwed.
Yeah, that's right. I knocked on a door of a household of international students. The water was coming up. They hadn't really got good advice from their landlord about what was going on. And they were like, oh, should we move our car? Like, what should we do? So there's a lot of people who are still quite cut off and don't have the information that they need.
It's quite sad because, you know, the people with the least amount of information are going to be the ones who are directly more affected as well.
That's right.
And that is an interesting marker of privilege. Like, we talk about financial privilege and stuff, but being connected to information. So, yeah, like, low-income homeless people, people who don't have internet access, international students, they're getting screwed more just because they didn't follow the right Facebook feed or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. And I think these crises often, it's not necessarily a crisis in itself. It's just revealing things that are already going on in the community in a more acute way. And we can see, like, the housing crisis really coming to a head. We can see, like, the struggles that low-income families are facing. Elderly and disabled people who are in apartment blocks. We've heard stories about people in wheelchairs who are just stuck in their apartments now because they can't use the lifts.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Is this year an election year?
It's a federal election.
Not running. We've won our elections, so we're sweet.
But you know, wouldn't it be a good time to sort of galvanise and sort of talk about, you know, how we, obviously we can't prevent flooding, but, you know, the response to it as well would be a good thing to start chatting about as well?
Totally. And I think there's two elements of that. I mean, one is obviously climate change. It's like we know that global warming makes these sorts of events more likely and more severe. Like, Brisbane has a long history of flooding. It's a floodplain and it does flood and people should know that. But these sorts of extreme weather events are predicted to become more frequent due to global warming. So one of the best ways to prevent or reduce the impact of further flood is to take strong action on climate change. So we've got to connect what's happening here right now to that broader conversation. But the other piece of the puzzle that Bo, you and I were talking about off air as well is just that this is partly an artificial disaster in that humans made the decision to build on the floodplain. And for decades and, in fact, centuries, people with local knowledge and particularly First Nations people but also other scientists and hydraulics experts have been like, don't build there, man. That's going to flood. And yet the property developers want to make a lot of money and so they – even places like Rocklea, that should not have been developed. But decades ago, a couple of developers were like, yeah, we'll create housing in Rocklea. There was a reason that land hadn't been developed earlier. It was because it was flood prone. And so these developers build housing in vulnerable areas, they make a lot of money, then they piss off, and it's the people who end up living there that have to deal with the long-term ramifications.
Yeah, there's a few proposed developments in areas that we now know are underwater. And so hoping that maybe the developers look at that and go, oh, this probably isn't a good idea and we should leave this community alone. Maybe we'll go somewhere a bit drier.
But that's what's wild about the way risk is spread, because the developer won't, you know, they can know full well that a site is flood vulnerable and will lose power in a flood.
The soil would have done all the research.
Yeah,
and all
they know. They're not, like, surprised by this, but they're making a calculated decision that as long as they can sell the apartments at a profit, down the track, they're out of the picture, so they will not have to deal with the consequences.
That's
it's
right.
really diabolical when you think about it.
Yeah, and I think, like, that is a classic marker of, like, modern governments pushing risk down onto individuals and pushing risk down on to the most vulnerable people, which is why having those really strong community networks is, like, one of the most powerful things that we have, to be sharing risk across the neighbourhood, sharing resources, sharing information, to push back against this kind of individualisation that governments have created.
One small thing that they did in the after the 2011 floods, which I hope they'll do again, but they might not, is that they had a flood buyback scheme. So people whose homes were really flood prone, the council said, look, we'll buy this off you at the value you would have bought for before the flood, and we'll buy it off you and usually turn it into parkland. And that was a win-win, because that home, they were able to relocate and not lose a lot of money. It meant that the community got some more green space, and it reduced flood vulnerability for the broader neighbourhood. And so I really hope, and I think this is something that people can call on the council to do, is to buy back, if people want to sell and if someone wants to move from a flood-prone area, the council or the state government should buy that land back and turn it into parkland, because we need more public space.
Affordable housing for renters as well.
Or design it in a way that's, that's flood. Like, I mean, we definitely need more public housing. But I don't think we should be saying, let's put all the public housing on the floodplain.
we'll just put all the rich people out. But, you know, earlier you mentioned West End Community House and Mike are doing some stuff. What are they doing, and how can people sort of reach out, and what are you doing at the moment, and how can people reach out as well and ask, you know, the questions of what they need help with?
Yeah, West End Community House will be open each day for people to just drop in. So if you need somewhere to go to charge your phone or get a dry pair of socks or have a cup of tea and someone to chat to, you can go there. They're also helping people who might need to get out to the evacuation centres as well, people sleeping rough. So anyone who needs sort of immediate support, I'd encourage them to head down there. My office is also open on Vulture Street if people need to charge their phones or
is your car park underground?
It's dry. It's dry. So you can definitely come and park there. So we're at 90 Vulture Street if anyone needs to drop in.
And West End Community House is at 4 Norfolk Road, South Brisbane.
Yeah. People can pick up hot meals at Hope on Boundary Street, at the Hope Street Cafe. And similarly, if you want to donate food, if you are high and dry and you've got power, you can drop off hot cooked meals to Hope Street Cafe. You can also drop off food to Western Community House or the Hope Street pantry as well. And there's a Community Friends food bank on at Bunyapa Park on Wednesday afternoon as well for anyone who needs to drop in there. Obviously, over the next few days, as the water recedes, the cleanup will start. So I've been advising people, if you want to help with the cleanup, you should probably head to Bunnings to get your gumboots today before they run out. Head out, get some gloves, gumboots, goggles. Remember that the water will be really dirty. It's got sewage in it. If you can avoid the water for now, but once you start to clean up, be really careful because you can get sick from that water. So we'll be sharing more information over the next few days about cleanup.
I think, that just to really emphasise to people, it would really help to stay out of the water if you can. Like, some of us have to kayak through it or helping people salvage stuff, but don't go in if you can avoid it. And similarly, don't drive into the neighbourhoods if you can avoid it. In a way, there's kind of enough people locally who can help with some of the most immediate stuff. We don't. It actually causes more issues when people drive, like thousands of cars driving across the city, just clogs up the roads and makes it harder for emergency services to get through.
And like the building here, like we're open, we're back on air after the big rain that we've just had as well. So,
but you guys still don't have power here at the station, hey?
No, we have a generator. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
We'll always be on air. But our station manager just came over and just showed us that our doors will be open. So if anybody wants to drop some stuff off here.
Great.
That we can send to these places, by all means, get in contact with us and drop some stuff off. You know, if people are looking to come into West End, which they shouldn't be, if they don't need to, where should they not? You know, which street should they not be going down that are flooded?
We know there's flooding like down around Grey Street and even up Melbourne Street as well. Obviously, all those flooded streets sort of west of Montague are all underwater, Orley Street.
And bits of Montague Road itself,
hey? Bits of Montague Road, around Woolloongabba, when Flower Street's underwater, and down around Norman Creek, around Churchill Street, is pretty wet down there as well, and some other parts of East Brisbane.
Yeah, Walter Avenue and Hilton Street in East Brisbane are flooded. I think as the tides come up, a few more streets go under. So people can sometimes make a mistake and they're like, oh, it looks like Melbourne Street's clear again, but it might go under again when the tide comes back in tonight or tomorrow morning. Mm. So,
and are we expecting more rain?
There's more rain predicted later in the week. I mean, everyone's hoping it won't be as severe. It would have to be a lot more rain to replicate the kind of flooding we've just seen.
Yeah.
But the high tide peaks will still, you know, the water will climb a little bit again. So it can be a bit confusing for people because they watch the water drop and they're like, okay, the worst is over. And then it comes back again 6 hours later. And you're like,
Yeah, keep an eye on the high tide times. I think we've just had our high tide just about now down in West End, and then the other one will be sort of later in the evening today.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely get on and follow these guys on social media as well to check on updates about, where the food drop-offs are happening, you know, how the tide is going, you know, what streets not to go down to, but then also just the information in general. We're yarning about one area that's really affected at the moment. There's a whole lot of areas in southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales that are heavily affected as well. And I'm going to do my best to chat to different mob in these areas as well. Like I mentioned, a cousin of mine out in Ipswich, their place went under. They had to evacuate. And this was Saturday, maybe Friday, I think it was. They sent the kids to their friend's house. They were just cleaning the house. Definitely want to get around and have a chat to everybody that is doing it rough as well and find out how we can best support here on the station as well. But thanks for you fellas for coming on and having a yarn. It's great, to have yous on and have a yarn about this as well, about where people can go.
Thanks, Bo.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, just to remind everyone to be kind and be patient with each other because a lot of people are stressed at the moment. One of the easiest things we can do is be unselfish and show some care.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Thanks, mate.
That's all good. And definitely, jump on those links. And if you're in a city as well, have a look at West End Community House, have a look at MICA. And I'm sure there's services within your area as well that will best serve your community as well. Stay tuned to us as well because we'll have updates as well throughout the day. And as always, it's been a pleasure. You've been listening to AAA Murray Country.